bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook, NFL Week 10, Monday Night Football Edition. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. But before we get into the task at hand, I want to encourage you, our loyal listeners, FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard, $1,000 risk-free bets, 30-1 enhanced odds on tonight's Rams 49ers Monday Night Football Showdown. New user signups, if you're in a state where FanDuel is available to you, take full advantage. And Payne, don't call it a hot streak, friend. Don't call it a hot streak yet, my friend, but we are officially back to being the home of the first half under in the National Football League.
Got a little dicey there with some with the Zebras attempting to influence the outcome of that first half total in Tennessee.
They wanted to do everything they could to help the Titans get 7 points before the break, and there's no doubt they made us sweat in the waning seconds of that first half. But alas, we get there again. I believe on my count, that's now four straight best bet winners on first half unders for this very fine podcast we produce.
I believe that is the case, despite the West Virginia game being a blowout, ASU not going very well. 14-8 on best bets at the rate of free 99. Free 99. That works out to be pretty profitable.
It may be the single best value going on the internet these days. I know we'll talk about it on a Wednesday, but there's a reason you should listen to these podcasts when they drop to get the best of the number. Let's hope anybody following college football best bets made sure they had the Gophers plus 5.5. But let's get things started.
I feel good. In my heart of hearts there, I was like, man, I feel good that I beat Todd to the draw there. Getting 6 and not 5.5.
That's what.
But
happens.
That was a wild ending. That game, you feel terrible for the Minnesota kids. That was a rivalry where they've just been little brother. They kicked the shit out of Iowa. You have 41 minutes of possession and you outgain a team by over 125 yards. Like, you should be winning that game straight up. PJ Fleck was terrible. Guy was kicking field goals from the 1 yard line. Even though they were dominating in the trenches, he's kicking field goals from like the 13 yard line on 4th and 1. It was brutal.
You know, I can understand why you're no longer president of the Tanner Morgan fan club and you're now fully in the Stetson Bennett corner when it comes to college football quarterbacks. Oof. So,
are we going to talk about your text about Stetson Bennett?
No, we're going to save that text for Wednesday for the college football edition of the Bet the Board podcast, because I think it makes for great content, especially when you look at the college football slate and know we're going to struggle to find four games worth a damn.
That works.
All right, let's start with your love interest in the National Football League. That, of course, being Patrick Mahomes and what we saw last in the good, the bad, and the ugly. Safe to say that the Phoenix has risen from the ashes and all is well with Kansas City offensively after last night's performance?
They look good. I kind of been hinting at this, right? You know, just let's this thing play out. I understand that everyone needs a good storyline, and things had looked really ugly the previous 3 weeks. And for whatever reason, the Raiders didn't really execute the defensive game plan that had given the Chiefs troubles. And when you don't do that, you see what transpires, and that's Patrick Mahomes going bananas again. Defensively, though.
Yeah,
what
go,
was
I'll let
the
you
one
take this.
Thing we talked about, right? It was everyone thinks the Chiefs defense is absolutely dreadful. And I've just been pounding the table and saying, one, we don't expect them to be elite. Two, all they need to be is average. And the last 4 weeks, regardless of opponent, right? People be like, oh, Daniel Jones. Actually, look at his career road splits. He's a very good quarterback. And it's like Jordan Love. I understand it. Like, we can kind of toss that data point out. But they had been very good stopping the run, were again last night. The secondary is coming together. There are some pieces here that are trending in the right direction. And Spagnuolo is a very good defensive mind. He's going to put these guys in great positions, but there's just been so many little tweaks and changes defensively, right? Like being able to kick Chris Jones inside, bringing in Melvin Ingram to the outside, getting the linebacker core a little bit healthier, having the young kids emerge there in Bolton and Gay, making the switch from Thornhill as opposed to Sorensen, who did have an interception last night. Good for him. Those all were like big things throughout this process, right? I mean, you had Frank Clark, who had, I believe, missed three games and was like dealing with dual hamstring injuries. Chris Jones had missed time. So like a lot of things were going on, right? You couldn't handpick two worse opponents offensively to start the season. I believe in what Spagnuolo is. There are some pieces here, and they were dominant again last night. I think the number I said, Todd, was we'll believe in this defensive improvement if they can hold the Raiders to 24 or less.
And they went out there. They exceeded expectations. And I think, to your point, it's crazy because I sent out a tweet last night. People go, oh, we don't care. The Chiefs defense, they haven't played anybody. Well, tell that to the other opponents that the Raiders had sliced and diced in recent weeks. And now Kansas City will have arguably one of its biggest tasks this coming weekend when they welcome the Dallas Cowboys into Arrowhead, a game where if they hold the Cowboys to 24 or less, or maybe even 28, I think it's still considered a win.
Yes. I think the barometer changes a little bit this week.
One thing, rather than staying in just the good, I do want to talk about the Raiders a little bit because I'll be honest, I was a little bit disappointed, not necessarily in their game plan, although who knows how much differently things go if the Raiders don't take a false start. When they get the initial stop, a three and out to start the game, they get to midfield, and if they're playing on their front foot, the dynamic of that football game can be very different. But it looked for the first time, maybe in recent weeks, to be a lifeless bunch out there. There wasn't energy. There wasn't that fire. There were stupid penalties from the Raiders. And while it's a 60-minute sample size, it's against one of your most bitter rivals, you begin to wonder what the emotional toll, everything the Raiders have had to go through off the field, has taken on this group. And I think Sunday will be a litmus test because if they struggle against the Bengals and lose that game by double digits against a Cincinnati team that's well-rested, you look at the Raiders' upcoming schedule. Payne, for me, I don't make them a favorite of more than a field goal in a single game other than the December 26th contest against the Broncos. And this thing could get off the rails real fast for a team whose win total coming into the year was only 7.5.
I think you said that perfectly, and it was 7 at a lot of places, 7 as well. And so they get out to this hot start and suddenly people lose perception of what they potentially are, and the holes are starting to show. And I think that was the one thing that was, when you look at offensively, let's start there. Who knew the offensive line was going to be like this bad? I think everybody, right? And they just got some weird performances early in the season where they were able to hold up a little bit. But we know the Alex Leatherwood experiment has not worked. They've had to kick him inside to guard. And so basically it's like Colton Miller as an above average lineman. That's the only guy in that entire offensive line that's any good. And so you couldn't run the ball last night. And then you lose Ruggs, who had really emerged as not just a deep threat, but an overall receiver. And so now it's like, you know, Hunter Renfro's nice, but we know what he is. Brian Edwards, right, had the big play over the middle. They're going to need more of that. Teams are able to focus a little bit more on Darren Waller. So you're starting to see maybe where that can cause some issues. Defensively, we're all just kind of waiting. I understand it's a great story with Max Crosby beating addiction and coming back, and Ngakoue has been awesome. Like, those are two guys that have never been premier pass rushers and just playing out of their mind. There is going to be a little bit of a pullback there. Casey Hayward is a guy who was jettisoned from the Chargers, and he is having one of his best seasons ever at age, 30 plus. Can that continue? So they got off to a really hot start, and then you just, all those things off the field. We know how grueling an NFL season is. Now add an extra game to this year. And then add all of the offseason distractions that have transpired. At some point, you're going to be like, Jesus, like I'm just out of gas. Yep. And that's kind of what we saw last night.
No, there's no doubt about it. And like I said, we'll get a better indication of exactly what this team has left in the tank if they can bounce back with the Bengals coming to town, a game that'll be right around a pick 'em at FanDuel Sportsbook. But arguably, Payne, the best feel-good story of all of NFL Week 10 thus far has been the return of Cam Newton. I was honestly surprised that he was as involved in the offense after spending 3 days in the building for Matt Rhule at Joe Brady and company. But you look at P.J. Walker, he was better than a game manager out there. We saw Carolina to impose their will physically on the offensive side of the ball. They were able to run, control the trenches. We knew what this team could bring to the table defensively, and suddenly here we are looking at the Carolina Panthers, if the season ended today, in the seventh spot in the NFC playoff picture.
My feelings have been made known about PJ Walker. I don't think he's very good, and that's probably why he spurned us before half.
I don't want to talk about
another defensive game plan where you scratch your head. Vance Joseph has been nails this season, and I understand DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson can beat you deep, and you don't want that one-shot luck play to happen, but Arizona sat back in coverage. PJ Walker threw 22 passes less than 9 yards yesterday. Didn't attempt to pass more than 19 yards. And that off coverage the Cardinals played basically allowed Walker to cheat, right? He knew where he wanted to go pre-snap, got the ball out 2.1 seconds on average. League average is 2.5 seconds. So the defense didn't make PJ Walker think or process or read or go through all of his reads where he lines up and says, hey, like my initial read's on the left and all of a sudden I got to come back to my third read. That never happened. So that was really where I think the defensive game plan went awry for the Cardinals. We know the Panthers' defense, though, is damn solid. That's been the calling card of the team. They're designed to be the opposite of the 49ers' defense, right? Carolina wants to pressure you up front. They want to send blitzes. They play lots of man coverage behind it. They weren't going to let Colt McCoy sit in the pocket and throw 4- and 5-yard passes. Colt McCoy's intended air yards yesterday, over 8.5 yards without Hopkins. Completion percentage ended up being 11% below expectation. Last week against the 49ers, Colt McCoy's intended air yards were 3.5. Completion percentage was 10% above expectation. You see the difference? So the game plan was vastly different. It was the smarter game plan, and that's why Arizona wasn't as effective. Now, you hate to be like the narrative guy, and some of this has been debunked over the long-standing time, but there are some factors in this game where, you know, Carolina gets Cam Newton back, as you alluded to. It was clear he was a boost to the organization. Even after being with the team only 3 days, you see him leading some of the off-the-field meetings, right? Like, there was someone caught a clip of him where the offense is on the sidelines and Cam Newton, not the coaches, kind of leading the charge, which was interesting. And then he gets the early touchdown on the ground, has another one throwing, and there's just kind of this spark. But we have seen Arizona in these spots sometimes not show up. And so you get the monster win last week. You got the big game on deck against Russell Wilson in Seattle. And suddenly, you know, you get a little bit of a sleepy spot here when you see PJ Walker coming to town.
Yeah, we've been waiting for Arizona to kind of lay an egg. It didn't happen against the Houston Texans, mainly because Houston couldn't do some of the things defensively that Carolina was able to. And of course, a team that was limited offensively, when you give them short fields early on in the game, it's much easier to pin your ears back and go after the opposition when you're up 14-0, 7 minutes in. Do you want to heap praise on the head coach right in your neck of the woods for the kind of defensive effort he was able to inspire on Thursday night against the Ravens?
Yeah, I think you have to. Big game for Miami. That's more of the team we expected coming into the season, especially defensively. The one thing we outlined on the podcast was you had heard leading up to the game, well, the Dolphins play a ton of man. How are they going to possibly stop Lamar Jackson? And you start to dig into some of those numbers that we divulged, and Lamar Jackson had actually been substantially better against zone this year than man. Lamar's completion percentage was 10% below expectation. The Ravens were held to a negative 0.143 EPA per rush. That was the fourth worst mark of the entire week. And I kind of go out of my way to not sound like a homer on teams that I like. And so I didn't go into too much depth, but Javon Holland was mentioned multiple times in our breakdown along with Brandon Jones. And those two guys allow your defense to be really versatile, right? Javon Holland right now is, you hate to say this after 9 weeks, but he might be the most versatile defender in the entire NFL as a rookie. You can line him up outside and he can defend wide receivers. You can put him in the slot and he's physical enough to defend your tight end. You can watch him come up and crush somebody in the run. You can put him on the end as a blitzer, and he doesn't allow Lamar Jackson's speed to get to the outside on the run. And so basically you had Brandon Jones and Javon Holland be the keys of that entire game plan for the Dolphins defense, where you can go out there with 5 and 6 defensive backs because they're strong enough to hold up in the trenches, but they're also fast enough to not allow anything outside.
One thing
and
real quick.
Cover both
real
tight
quick.
Ends and wide receivers. Yeah, go ahead.
Where did Javon Holland play his college football, Payne?
He played at Oregon.
We're saying nice things about a West Coaster. It's a first time. I'm marking this down and I'm time stamping it.
You know, he quit on the Ducks. He was like, sheesh. I'm going to sit out. These guys are too soft for me. This is killing me.
I knew there had to be a caveat to it. I knew there was a caveat coming.
There was the one thing, right? Like, I'm going to phrase this nicer, so let me think of the word. I didn't want to use the word simpleton. But there were people that were like, oh my God, did you see the Broncos trade up? Because they knew the Dolphins wanted Javonte Williams. It was obvious they needed a running back. And the Dolphins are just like sitting back. And mind you, Chris Greer's botched a lot of things. So let's not give him too much credit. But Brian Flores' like hand-picked target was Javon Holland, just based upon all of the versatility he had defensively. And that's exactly what he wants from his safeties, right? It's the reason Minka Fitzpatrick is not in town anymore. Minka Fitzpatrick wanted to play one position and one position only. He didn't want to be moved around. And so Javon Holland was that guy. It was his favorite player in the entire draft. That's who they were going to get. And they had a first round grade on him. And I think everyone in the draft world was like, if Holland didn't sit out, he would have been, you know, in that 15 to 25 range in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about identifying talent, and the Dolphins have done a great job there. But this also may be the first time on this podcast you called the defender that didn't hail from Florida State the most versatile in the league. I figured it always Derwin James, or of course,
he's a little quicker than Derwin,
or of course, Jalen Ramsey. He was also younger, so he's out there, yeah. And there's no doubt Miami put together.
He also hasn't had like four knee surgeries.
I guess when you're not held together by surgically repaired ligaments, it allows you to be a little bit quicker.
Big win this weekend, baby. Big win.
There's no doubt, and you can gloat about that on Wednesday. All right. The Green Bay Packers also paying defensively put together a great performance. I'm not sure if it's as much on Russell Wilson, who was 0 for 7 on deep balls and shut out for the first time in his career as the Seahawks starting quarterback. But the Packers exceed expectations on that side of the ball. I mean, they held Seattle to 3.5 yards per play through the first three quarters. Russ's completion percentage wasn't anything that we've grown accustomed to. And at some point, water has to meet its level. This Green Bay defense can't keep playing this well, can they?
The Packers defense is on fire right now. And my brain is in a pretzel because of it. If you go back to the preseason preview for the NFC North, everything I was hearing was the Packers defense was going to be really improved. You had Aaron Rodgers talking about how the defense in camp made him actually think, and that guys were all over the place, and what you saw pre-snap changes post-snap. But the defense wasn't very good early. And it makes sense, right? You're learning a new system, a brand new scheme. Everything was different. And then you lose Jair Alexander. Other guys were injured. The big horses up front weren't playing as well. But the last 3 weeks against Kyler, Mahomes, and Russ, on the surface level, to shut those offenses down and those quarterbacks down, to be fourth and drop back EPA allowed over this 3 week stretch, tip of the cap, right? Now, I think we do have to put some things in context. And Arizona's playing with an injured QB and wide receiver tandem on a short week. The Chiefs offense was likely at its lowest point in the entire Mahomes era. And because Jordan Love was starting, there wasn't really a reason for the Chiefs to press offensively. And then yesterday, you get Russell Wilson in his first game back in a month. And that was a Seattle offense that we outlined was struggling before Wilson got injured. And then you face a version of Russell Wilson that returned from a 6 to 8 week injury in 4 weeks. And the doctor that operated on Russ said it was the worst he's seen a finger that he's ever operated on. And so you get Russ in freezing temps with a metal screw in his finger, which causes tightening in the cold. Looks like dog shit. Balls were floating on him. He was skipping balls. He was off target on throws. Wilson had the largest completed air yards versus intended air yard split of all NFL quarterbacks last week, and by double, a 9-yard discrepancy. It was bizarre to me. And Wilson's first game back, Todd, against a Packers secondary that plays a shell look, the game plan was to have Russell Wilson throw deep all game. And the game script didn't force that to happen, right?
No, like it was there was
0-0
no need
zero
for it.
For a long stretch. It was 3-0 for a long stretch. Like it, Russell Wilson, second largest intended air yards of nearly 12.5 yards yesterday. It made no sense.
Yeah, it was definitely confusing to watch. The elements played a role, and there's no doubt, obviously, cold temperature is not ideal for having pieces of metal in joints that you need a little bit of dexterity when it comes to holding and, more importantly, throwing a football. So full marks to the Packers defense. We'll see them on display Sunday when they travel to Twin Cities to take on the Minnesota Vikings in what should be a fascinating game as far as the NFC playoff picture is concerned. With the good, though, pain comes the bad. And before we get there, I want to give you a chance if there was anything I glossed over that you wanted to try and highlight in a positive manner.
Yeah, I think we hit this quickly, right? Washington. Taylor Heinicke was very good. Completion percentage 9.6% above expectation. We heard Bruce Arians during this week say, hey, we're off the bye. Our defense is a little bit healthier. Although Richard Sherman did get scratched at like 5 minutes before the game. But he thought they had a great game plan in place because he's like, we didn't know what to expect from Taylor Heinicke in the playoff game. But now we do. And we've had 2 weeks to prepare for him. We're going to be great here. And that wasn't the case. Taylor Heinicke was very good. The other thing that you have to praise here is the defensive effort. Because Washington showed up in a big way. We saw the defense kind of trending a little bit better, but we know they've been a massive disappointment this season. But correct me if I'm wrong, Montez Sweat went on the IR before the game. Then yep. You lose Chase Young early in the game. And somehow your defense holds Brady down. Now, I know Godwin was banged up a little bit. There's still no AB or Gronk. Brady was only pressured on 20% of his dropbacks, so that the heat still isn't getting home for Washington, but it's explainable, again, with Montez Sweat out and Chase Young injured. But Brady had a 0 passer rating when pressured. The coverage held up in the back, which was like the first time all season that the coverage unit for Washington was very good. They held Brady to a completion percentage 7% below expectation. So anytime you win the game outright by double digits as a near double-digit underdog, I think you got to give them a little bit love.
It seems to happen almost every week now in the National Football League. Double-digit dogs not only covering, but getting to the window. And it's a reminder as well why when you're betting any of these underdogs plus the points, always use a portion of your bankroll and position size to bet them on the money line if you happen to catch some wind in your sails with either a Carolina or a Washington this past weekend winning outright. Bad pain. I don't want to stay in a negative state of mind. I know we have a lot of ground to cover. So a couple of things that stood out to me, feel free to run with them if there's things you wanted to add. Cleveland Browns defensive effort. It looked like an absolute no-show after they go up 7-0. I think you texted me and went, I can't believe Jared Stidham just marched the Brown the length of the field. I said, it's going to get worse because it wasn't Jared Stidham. It was Brian Hoyer going 6 plays, 95 yards. The outcome had long since been decided, but Cleveland just didn't show that energy, the intensity, or effort you want to see from a team that you really believe was going to vie for a division title and still can once they get healthy on both sides of the ball. The Chargers offense, it continues to bog down for what feels like the third week in a row. They underwhelm, to say the least. For the first 50 minutes of that game, they'd accumulated a grand total of 184 total yards and 4.2 yards per play. They were better against the run, but quite frankly, it didn't matter against the Vikings. And in arguably the most disappointing result, especially in this household, not for me, but my significant other, the Pittsburgh Steelers ill-equipped to stop the run when the Lions had no threat of a passing game. You were not worried about Jared Goff doing anything over the top, yet here you are, Pittsburgh, giving up 229 rushing yards on 39 carries, and Jared Goff looked like a, to quote Payne Insider, a fish out of water operating from the pocket as a passer.
Let's start with the Browns because their issues Sunday were the issues they've had all season, and they have not been able to get off the field on third down, 21st in defensive efficiency on that down coming into yesterday. Everywhere else looks good. And so you start to wonder what's going on with Joe Woods. He's supposed to be the secondary guy. He's supposed to be the, I don't know, like he's a secondary coach, right? And now he's a defensive coordinator. And so his secondary is struggling. And that's, you just start to wonder what's going on there, because you think about some of the money spent in the draft capital to fix that secondary. It's been good. The Patriots' first drive, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 13. Those are get off the field downs. Those are hold to a field goal attempt downs. Mac Jones, 16% above expectation yesterday. That was the best rate for week 10. Joe Woods was trying to prove a point late in that game. Down 38-7, he kept his starters out there. And you hate to say this, but I think the Browns defensive players quit. And you mentioned Brian Hoyer marches down, right? 95 yards on six plays. Ugly scene for us, because I know we had a good number under 45 and a half in that game. So you weren't really expecting that. Probably deserved better in that game on the total anyways, right? Baker Mayfield on an interception sets up a five-yard touchdown drive. You get, you know, a fourth and 19 at midfield, go for it late. So that was a weird one. Chargers, I don't think there's anybody that identified the issue before us offensively.
Nope. You honestly, you get full credit. You called for this well when things were running well and everyone was ready to anoint Brandon Staley, Joe Lombardi, and this Chargers offense the greatest thing on the West Coast since Sean McVay took over the Rams. You said, I'm not quite so sure everyone should be this excited. And over the last couple of weeks, the regression monster has bitten them on the ass multiple times.
Through 10 weeks right now, we are. Joe Lombardi hasn't adjusted his offense to Justin Herbert's skill set. It's like he still thinks he's in New Orleans with Drew Brees. Yesterday against a Viking secondary that was down two starters, a defense that was down three starters along the defensive line, he devised a game plan where Herbert's average intended pass was 5.7 yards. The offense constantly throws short of the sticks. The receivers are Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. Neither of those guys are run after the catch receivers. So you can't incessantly throw short of the sticks as well, right? And the Chargers did. Herbert's completion percentage, because of it, 12% below expectation. And I get it, it's year one. Herbert's learning a new system. More's been put on his plate. Not every player is going to match the scheme you want to run because it is your first year there and you haven't gotten all the parts that you want. But you were in a position to be in first place in the division. You have to be a head coach, right? That's, you are garnering coach of the year talk. Brandon Staley and Joe Lombardi have to be better, right? They have to mold their systems to the players they currently have, and that's not happening right now.
No, they're going to have to be better this weekend, too. An interesting game that goes a long way, not only in the division, as Kansas City now has moved into first place, but also as far as the AFC pecking order is concerned. Suddenly, the Chargers and Steelers could be two teams vying for that bottom half of the AFC postseason berth, and a tie-breaking win one way or another will go a long, long way.
Steelers, let's give credit to the Lions, right? Like, baby steps. You know, you're on the road as an underdog, dome team in weather. We know Goff has small hands, so his history in poor weather conditions is not very good. To me, you saw the fatigue factor. Right? I mean, like, the Lions were off their bye. They're hungry. The Steelers just had the battle late Monday night. The league did the Steelers no scheduling favors this week in terms of rest and prep. The Lions also got healthier along the offensive line. And that is a unit that is by far and away Detroit's best. And when healthy, the Lions offensive line can be one of the better in the NFL. Like, they've spent some money in draft capital there, you know? But I've been saying this just about any time we've broken down the Steelers. The defensive line isn't what it once was. You can't let Javon Hargrave walk. You can't let Bud Dupree walk. You can't have Tuitt on IR and think you're going to be the same defense up front. The secondary couldn't afford two key contributors. They let guys like, you know, Hilton walk. So past Joe Hayden and Fitzpatrick, there's not much there. And Fitzpatrick really isn't willing, as I alluded to be like the most versatile guy. So safety is one of the most devalued positions in the NFL, and suddenly you just got a guy sitting back. And Joe Hayden, as good as he is, right, he's 32. So there are some serious holes on this defense. Coming into the week, the Steelers were 19th in defensive rush efficiency on first down. So the rest advantage for the Lions, the O-line getting healthier for the Lions, and that being, you know, Detroit's best unit against the defense, it's been pushed around up front on first downs. You can kind of see how that transpired. But to your point, right, like, Jared Goff wasn't a threat to throw it. There aren't really great receivers. Let's load the box and force some things. I do think, right, when you have those weather conditions and you're a defensive guy, like, trying to hold up at the point of attack, the offensive line might have a little bit of an advantage there. That probably played a role as well. But, you know, all in all, there's a lot of factors on why the Steelers' defensive front wasn't the best against the run yesterday.
And I'm not going to allow the Steelers offense to skate either. I know Mason Rudolph is out there. You weren't sure what to expect. A nice opening drive to go up 7-0. But you also can have a veteran receiver who's supposed to be your number one in Diontae Johnson fumble the football in overtime when you're in plus territory. Pat Freiermuth coughed one up as well along the sidelines. One thing I will say, though, and it's a friendly reminder to all of you, our loyal listeners, if you guys haven't subscribed to the Bet the Board newsletter, you'd have been sitting pretty with a Jared Goff under 250.5 passing yardage ticket that you never had a sweat from start to finish as a partial position. So a reminder that there are plenty of ways to get Bet the Board content. Not only our podcast on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but the articles that were there that highlighted the Detroit Lions as a market move, and of course the newsletter that gave out the Goff prop under passing yards as well. Anything else, Payne, that stood out to you in a negative manner before we decide to eviscerate a potential starting quarterback in Denver as my lone consideration for the ugly category this week?
Nope, I will let you lead that charge.
You actually texted me, and I had to go back and watch it. In real time, I wasn't quite sure what transpired at the end of the third quarter when Darius Slay picked up a fumble on fourth and short, was dancing around. The effort from Denver, I thought the play had been whistled dead, and there's Darius Slay dancing down the sidelines, and you send me a text, and I'm paraphrasing here, I believe it. Well, Teddy's not going to like the way that looks on film, and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is Payne talking about? Teddy didn't do anything there. It was a fumble from the running back. You know, Philadelphia ices the game going up 27-13, and it's all she wrote. Well, I went back, watched that play. Teddy decided to make a career move and a body preservation play when it came to not doing anything to try and slow down Darius Slay as he's racing through that Denver offense to the house for an 82-yard scoop and score. I'm convinced Teddy Bridgewater, all he had to do was lean over and he could at least redirect Darius Slay off his path. And then, of course, Teddy Bridgewater decides to throw the ball into the stands late in the game when there may or may not have been some overbetters out there who thought Denver could get us through the front door.
The only thing Teddy was missing there was the like red matador blanket where the bull was just charging and was like, hey, come this way. Not a good look. Didn't make any effort. Now, he did have a serious leg injury that almost cost him his life. We have seen Baker Mayfield throw picks and try to attempt tackles that have left him severely injured. And so clearly that was a business decision for a guy that isn't necessarily guaranteed a starting quarterback job, and injury would certainly take him out of the mix there. But it's not a good look. It's not a good look. It was, I quit on this play. But with Teddy, there are some circumstances that I think other quarterbacks don't potentially have. That was a bizarre game, by the way. That thing should have went over. I don't know how that thing stayed under.
Yeah, simple. I mean, it's the Denver Broncos. Every week they put together more and more bizarre results. You see them on top of the world with an offense that looks like the greatest thing in the on the face of the earth, scoring 30 points en route to blowing out the Cowboys, and then can't do anything in the second half, mustering a grand total of 3 points in a 30-13 loss at home to Philadelphia. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You, of course, can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. From the good, the bad, and the ugly, Payne, to a couple of look-ahead line adjustments, and probably the most pronounced this weekend will happen only 72 hours from now on Thursday Night Football, where New England, on the heels of their dominant performance against the Cleveland Browns, Atlanta getting absolutely boat raced by the Dallas Cowboys, New England goes from a 3.5-point road favorite on the look-ahead number at FanDuel Sportsbook out to a 5.5-point favorite, and even seeing some sixes out there in the market at some shops.
So obviously part of this is the drastic difference in results that we just watched unfold. There isn't necessarily the huge advantage for the home team here, since Atlanta also had to travel back to Atlanta because they were on the road this week. And Cordarrelle Patterson is highly questionable for this game. So that would be a large piece to miss from your offense just based upon what he provides, right? He's a running back one play, he's on special teams the next, he's your best receiver the following play. So having him out potentially, let's keep our eyes on that, and knowing that Ridley's already down, and also typically the short week usually is an advantage for the better coach. I think we know who that is. So you could see why this line has fluctuated a little bit.
Understand so completely.
I haven't done enough digging on this game, but certainly one we will break down in a couple days, and I'll have a little bit more on it at that time.
We also do know that Mac Jones will be playing in an environment that he's had plenty of career success in as a member of the Alabama Crimson Tide as well. So despite being a road game, he's plenty familiar with the surroundings at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. Don't look now, Payne, but your Dolphins on that two-game win streak that we talked about during the good, sitting at 3-7, have four very winnable football games on the horizon. And some people, well, at least some media networks, talking about them as a dark horse playoff contender in the AFC. We've seen their number go from 2.5-point road favorite for the trip to MetLife to take on an AFC East rival in the New York Jets, now a 3-point favorite trending towards 3.5 at FanDuel.
So part of this number in terms of movement is obviously based on result, right? You had the Dolphins go out and beat Lamar and the Ravens on national television. The other part of this move is when this look-ahead line was created, Jacoby Brissett was the starting quarterback, and we didn't know if Tua would be playing in this game. So that's part of the move. Jets also just got absolutely pounded yesterday as well. So those are the things that are transpiring here. We'll have to keep an eye on some of the injuries because there is some interesting ones on both sides, but that's primarily the cause of this movement so far, is the lopsided difference in results. And then Tua most likely being anointed the starter here.
I know he doesn't move the number, but safe to assume we go back to Zach Wilson if you're Robert Saleh in the New York Jets. So the rookie quarterback assumes the reins given what we saw from Mike White yesterday.
If he's healthy enough.
So interesting scenario developing there, because I mean, I thought that Wilson could have even started this past week, but I mean, I don't care if it was Joe Willie Namath. They weren't beating the Bills or maybe even covering, catching two touchdowns given what we saw from Josh Allen and company. Two modest line moves, not obviously through key numbers, just crossing the zero here, so we can touch on them briefly. Saints and Eagles, we've seen a favorite flip there. The Eagles now 1.5-point favorites hosting New Orleans, and the Cardinals and Seahawks. The Seahawks were a short favorite on the look-ahead number. The Cardinals now modest road favorites for a divisional showdown in the AFC West.
We'll have NFC to monitor, monitor the situation with Alvin Kamara this week. I had received a text message Monday that there wasn't a prayer Kamara was going to play, but I know there was some speculation that he may get out there. This week is certainly questionable as well. Let's see what transpires there. Let's see how high this thing gets. That's kind of how I'll phrase that. Cardinals, Seahawks, I think we are going to see the return of Kyler and Hopkins. So that movement does not shock me. It's going to be people getting out ahead, grabbing the Cardinals, and then figuring out what to do with it later. Is there a situation when they both get announced in that the Seahawks are now a 4-point dog at that point? We'll see, right? So if you can get out and lay Cardinals -1 and then come back with the Seahawks +4 and try to middle through the largest key number in the NFL, that makes a lot of sense. We also have to keep in mind what Russell Wilson looked like last week, and that was a quarterback that clearly was not 100%. And that's an offense that, again, was struggling prior to his departure.
I'm very curious to see for Seattle, you talk about injuries, if Chris Carson is healthy enough to go, because I think that'll give them a weapon that they so desperately need. Alex Collins was a nice fill-in, but we know what Collins is at this point in his career. He's not a bell cow back. And to your point, Seattle has to show a heck of a lot more balance until we see Russell Wilson feel comfortable with that finger gripping the football and really letting it rip. But before we get to week 11 and a big game in the NFC West, we have one game still to be decided this week as we close things out on Monday Night Football with the Los Angeles Rams headed on the road to take on the San Francisco 49ers. It's the Rams, a 3.5-point road favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. Total on the game, 50.5. We know the narrative. We've heard it plenty, and you'll hear it in all the build-up to tonight's game, that the 49ers just flat-out can't win in their own building. They have a very long home losing streak that they'll put on the line tonight. And as far as Kyle Shanahan's concerned, a little bit of heat starting to swirl around him. We know that he had the great run to the Super Bowl, but other than that, it hasn't exactly been the rosiest of situations in the Bay Area. But he has had a ton of success against Sean McVay in the past. The 49ers have won the previous four meetings over the last two seasons. And I guess, Payne, you know, when we begin to look at the 49ers, we can talk about their ATS futility at Levi Stadium, 19-37-1 since starting play there in 2014. We can talk about the Rams' success off a loss, 16-5 straight up under McVay, 14-6-1 against the number. But let's talk about the matchup first and foremost. What has Kyle Shanahan done to make this 49ers team so successful against the Rams over the last couple seasons?
He's good. Like you said, right? He's been under fire recently, and for good reason, right? It was a complete no-show last week against Arizona in a pretty needy spot. And the only wins the 49ers have this year are against teams with losing records like Detroit, Chicago, and Philly. And you're looking at a head coach now, right? Shanahan can't just be an offensive coordinator. He has to be a head coach, and that consists of managing personalities, managing the locker room, overseeing hires and personnel, right? It's like I just can't bury my head in the game plan and call plays and say, hey, that's it. So I understand why he's coming under fire. Obviously, the organization as well is drafted miserably. And you start to think of some of the contributors that they've drafted in the last few years, like they're just non-existent. Now, as an offensive mind, he's still pretty damn good. The 49ers are sixth in overall efficiency, despite facing a top 10 schedule of defenses and arguably the most versatile piece in George Kittle's missed extended time. You have to get your ground game going with Elijah Mitchell. I know he was banged up last week, was dealing with the rib injury, still played a bunch of snaps. He'll be fine here, gets the extra day. The outside zone run, as we know, sets up a lot of things that Shannon Hill wants to call off of that. On the surface, it would appear the 49ers could have a ton of success running the ball. That's what they have done in, you know, previous matchups, even last year in the Week 12 matchup. They got off to a hot start on the ground. That didn't really work in the second half, so they opened some things up through the air. But the Rams defense, they've played an average schedule of run offenses. They're 20th in EPA per rush allowed. So you like that matchup. Now, you dig in a little bit deeper. And if you look at early downs, the first three quarters, the Rams are actually fourth in EPA per rush allowed. You look at first and second down runs, Rams are top 10 in efficiency stopping runs on those downs. So I don't think it will come as easy as a lot of people think when you just look at the surface stuff. But the 49ers are going to have to get that ground game going. I'm interested to see how Raheem Morris elects to defend Deebo Samuel this year. Obviously, that mission gets a little bit harder with Kittle back and Ayuk out of the doghouse and really surging in a major way. If you look at Ayuk, he ran routes on 96% of dropbacks last week, had a 26% target share. He was the focal point of the offense. He is like the traditional number one type receiver. Deebo Samuel's awesome, obviously, but he's more of like your gadget guy. Shanahan did a really good job in the Week 12 matchup last year, making sure Deebo didn't see Jalen Ramsey in coverage, and Deebo had 11 receptions for 133 yards. Only two of those catches were on cornerbacks covering him. So Shanahan really made sure like linebackers and safeties were the primaries in coverage based on his scheme. And we know like there's a lot of motion stuff and pre-snap movement and alignment. And so that's the one thing that Shanahan is just so great doing still is getting matchups for his guys. And when you have Kittle and you have Ayuk again coming on, it's tough to be like, hey, Jalen, just like go man Deebo and we'll figure it out from there. That might not be the case. The other matchup that is interesting here, and we'll have to keep an eye on this as well, Jalen Moore appears to be the starting right tackle for Mike McGlinchey tonight. He's a fifth round pick out of Western Michigan. He did start at left tackle in the Colts game for Trent Williams, gave up two pressures, had a penalty. Everything considered, it was a serviceable performance, but in that weather, right, like pass rushers really can't get up the field with a slick surface. So he might be worse than we think, although, again, he's moving to the right side of the line and not the left side. Let's keep an eye on Von Miller's status. His ankle injury was apparently worse than anticipated when the Rams traded for him. He did travel to San Francisco. It'll be a game-time decision, but word is that he won't play unless the team believes he's at or near 100%. He would be lined up against Jalen Moore. So that is something to monitor here over the next couple hours to figure out which side you like, because that would be a matchup advantage for Von Miller, I believe.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, you talk about how Shanahan obviously going to scheme to get his guys in space, and the numbers don't lie for those folks looking at George Kittle as well. I think in six out of his last seven matchups against this Rams team, he's either gone for 100 yards or had a touchdown. So clearly a key cog. And when you look at the Rams defensively, to your points, they've really struggled to try and slow down tight ends in coverage so far this season. Now, on the other side of the ball, we know the Rams are going to see what life is like without Robert Woods, a fortuitous bounce, so to speak, to bring Odell Beckham Jr. in to help that receiving core alongside Cooper Kupp, who's lighting the league on fire. We've seen Van Jefferson kind of come of age and providing a little bit more of an explosive big play component. But the Rams were done in last week by the Tennessee Titans pass rush. I mean, Matthew Stafford was constantly under duress, had his first multi-interception game of the season. Both picks, of course, led directly to Titans points. Can the 49ers do enough defensively to get Stafford off his spot and really make this Rams offense uncomfortable, knowing that their O-line is probably the one position group we have the most questions about?
And they're a little bit beat up too, injury wise. So, I mean, I don't know what we're going to get from the 49ers defense. You would think after last week's performance that you see a better effort here. I know the 49ers defense made the good, bad, and ugly last week. They're referenced again this week. Your hope is that D'Amico Ryan's game plan is better than it was against Colt McCoy in the Cardinals offense. Now, is he capable of that, right? We can't, like, it's fine to have a bad game plan, but how about an in-game adjustment once you see things changing? And that wasn't the case last week for D'Amico Ryans. And maybe Kyle Shanahan's covering for Ryans, but whether you read reports before the game or after the game, apparently the 49ers defense prepared their game plan for Kyler Murray and not Colt McCoy. I don't know if we give them...
I don't know what to think of that.
A break. I don't know if they just divulged their own incompetence. I don't know. Hopefully the 49ers are preparing for a Sean McVay offense with Matthew Stafford this evening. That'll be the place to start.
It's going into a college exam room going, wait, this is a biology class? All I did is study my physics textbook for the last 6 days.
So, you know, listen, like, part of this defensive regression for San Francisco is like the Jimmys and Joes aren't as good, right? They don't have the guys up front they once had. They're generating below average pressure. The secondary has been shredded at times, 25th in defensive pass efficiency. The teams that have beaten San Francisco this year have quarterbacks like Rodgers, Russ, Kyler, and a resurgent Carson Wentz. For the most part, the receiver groups on those teams are really good. The Rams, number one in EPA per dropback, third in passing efficiency. And now you're going up against a defense that's allowed 68% of passes to be caught. That's 25th in the NFL. Now, I'm not sure what it looks like tonight. You mentioned Robert Woods out. That is a massive loss for the Rams. He's just so versatile. You know, you can line him up outside. You can line him up in the slot. You can use him on end arounds. He's one of the best pass blocking receivers in NFL history. And I knew we were going to mention this because we were texting about it last night, so I looked it up. In just this season, among receivers with at least 150 snaps, only Byron Pringle has graded out a better run blocker than Woods. OBJ isn't the kind of receiver that's going to get dirty like Robert Woods. It'll be this seventh-round rookie, Ben, I'm going to butcher the name, so help me out here, Skoronek, is that it?
Yeah, the kid from Notre Dame / Northwestern, right? That's who you're talking about?
Yes.
Yep.
So he's going to fill in for Robert Woods. He's 6'3", 225 pounds. I think he's had, you know, 30-plus snaps so far. Not the best blocker, but he certainly has the size and stature to be a decent one. The word is OBJ has some packages tonight, but not the full playbook yet. So just kind of when you thought, like, you know, OBJ was a luxury, he's kind of become a necessity now at this point. But I still think I'd rather have Woods and DeSean Jackson than OBJ. But we'll find out. I think D'Amico Ryans has to go into tonight, and you bracket Cooper Kupp. You make Van Jefferson and a guy that's been in the system 3 days beat you. And that's got to be the game plan. We'll see if they can actually execute that.
I'm sure the Raiders would consider trading DeSean Jackson back to the Rams if they needed a deep threat at this point.
What was he doing after he caught the ball? It was like a whirly derby.
Yeah,
like
my thing is, I've never been out there and had somebody try and take my lunch on a football field, but my feeling is that he got hit. He was a little bit disoriented and didn't know exactly where he was trying to gain his bearings, because I figured he would have made a beeline for the end zone instead of kind of circling back and begin to run the wrong way before Rashad Fenton was able to knock that ball out of his hands.
After you were done dissecting frogs, who was the guy that was trying to take your lunch in school?
There was nobody.
On? Were you bullied?
No, absolutely not. I
get
was
it
not
all
bullied.
Out. This is a safe space.
No,
what was
so
the kid's name.
No, so there was nobody that bullied me. I mean, I always was an athlete, relatively speaking, but I used to be the instigator. So if my buddies wanted to try and stir things up, they knew I could run my mouth with the best of them. So they'd send me into a crowd to chirp. They'd wait for somebody to try and get in my face, and then they'd come in to kind of clean things up. That's what you get when you're a goalie. You get defensemen, you get forwards. Everybody comes to your defense if you want to run your yap.
I could actually see that happening. So, did anyone call you a pipsqueak as a youth?
Yeah, my dad. My dad called me pipsqueak.
Me and your dad are kind of in the same vibe on like 98% of things.
Are you calling yourself a father figure, Payne, when it comes to the Bet the Board corporate offices?
It could be seen as such. It could be seen as such.
Life
at
coach,
least underlying, right? The surface level stuff is, you know, you are certainly the more buttoned up human of the two, but...
Life
surface,
coach.
That's just surface level.
Motivator, investment advisor, Payne Insider. He checks every box you'd want somebody to do on their professional business card. Would you like to add anything else to your assessment of the Rams and 49ers? Should we discuss the number quickly before we call this podcast a wrap and take a 48-hour break from one another?
So I will let the listeners do what they choose. But the number should be Rams -3, -15 on a neutral. And so I think there are a lot of professional bettors that will inevitably be on the 49ers here. And they are waiting for a 4. But if the 4 doesn't pop, they'll probably still value bet the 3.5. In general, when we start to look at the schedule matrix and you circle spots weeks in advance, all of us were hoping and praying the Rams didn't pee down their leg last week because we would have had the 49ers +6 in this spot. So you do lose some value because of that. But I think we will see if fours pop, they might not necessarily last all that long, or they come extremely late as, you know, the Rams continue to attract public money. Well, it'll probably force the books to get there at some point.
When you look at the market early this morning on a Monday, you see some of the sharpest shops out there trending to a soft 3.5. We'll see if books known to cater to recreational players can get to the 4. And while it is rather cliche, we'll say it anyways, this is obviously the 49ers season in the wake of their loss last week against Arizona. Win here, you go to Jacksonville, you have a chance to get to 500 with 7 games remaining, and your aspirations of getting to the postseason at least remain alive. Lose this week, you go to 3-6. I think that's all she wrote for San Francisco. But in no way, shape, or form do I want that to be conveyed as a reason to try and bet a game. If the numbers and matchups don't line up, you sit it out. But as Payne said, talking about where this number should be properly priced, you just have to try and figure out what home field advantage is actually worth in the Bay Area, given some of San Francisco's struggles. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there also. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Go to FanDuel.com/BetTheBoard. All new users entitled to a 30-1 enhanced odds price on today's Rams and 49ers game. Take full advantage in states where FanDuel is available. Any final words of wisdom, life coach Payne?
That's it. Chat Wednesday and Thursday. Also,
yes.
Let's kind of do this a couple times throughout this podcast and the ones this week. The Thanksgiving week schedule will change. We will not be here for a Monday podcast next week. One podcast next week where the NFL and college football can join. So the next Monday podcast will be the 29th. So we will mention that over the next two podcasts, but typically we can tell which listeners just gravitate towards the best bet because we start getting DMs and emails and questions. No podcast today. So no podcast next Monday, the 22nd. Back again Monday, the 29th.
Listening comprehension is a great skill. Go ahead. Didn't want to cut you off.
Thanksgiving is nearing. There's going to be a lot of giveaways. And I won't spoil this, Todd, but Monday the 29th will be the 400th episode of Bet the Board. So we will have a Monday Night Football contest that we will have on Twitter. Be ready for that. We're also going to do a Thanksgiving giveaway for Apple Podcast listeners as well. So a lot of things coming for our loyal listeners.
Hey, it's a way that we can show our appreciation. We're thankful for all of you guys and girls that have been out there listening to us, whether it's from day one or whether this is the first time you found Bet the Board podcast. Hopefully, you've been able to profit with us all football season long. Each and every episode, our goal is to make you guys smarter as bettors so you can make more informed choices at the window, whether it's for your bets, your pools, or just to look like the smartest person in your office. We can't thank you guys enough for helping us get to that marquee milestone 2 weeks from today. So for Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with all of your Monday night football investments. And with whichever side or total you choose, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.